Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association. I'm Rob Pinheiro, joined once again by my good buddy Kevin Lucco. And this week we are honored to have Chelsea Ladd, the founder and chief editor, we'll even say, of the Dugout Dish website out there. Chelsea, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Chelsea, we wanted to kind of introduce fans to you a little bit this week. You were our surprise guest that we talked about at the end of last week's show. And so tell us a little bit about how you got involved in independent baseball and starting this website in the first place.
Well, the first professional game that I ever attended when I was younger was actually an Evansville Otters game. I automatically, at 10 years old, assumed that it was Major League Baseball. And, of course, my dad was like, no, this is not. He had to explain to me. And I didn't really get it at that point, but I am nestled between the Southern Illinois Miners and Evansville Otters of the Frontier League. So I kind of, that's where my heart is. I absolutely adore how independent baseball is. It's the old school feel. Like, you can go to a game and you can, it takes you back to the way Major League Baseball was at one point, before everything had to be, the sights and sounds had to be insanely, like, obscene and, you know, bigger the better. And I love it. I have so many friends that play independent baseball, and the grind that they go through just to be able to play the game they love. If I can promote them, if I can help them, and just give them recognition, then I feel like I'm doing my job. Dugout Dish started out with just covering Major League Baseball, and as the year went on, I realized, you know what, I want to be able to cover my friends. I want to be able to cover the teams that I know and love. I want people to see what they go through, just play the game. So it kind of spiraled from there, and I've been very fortunate through the Frontier League and the American Association. Everyone's been so kind to me. It's amazing, honestly.
Now, when you started the website, were there specific teams that you were trying to focus on, or you just kind of spread out through independent kind of Frontier Leagues and American Association in general?
It originally started, it was going to focus on the Cardinals. Because I actually covered and went to Christian Day at the ballpark last year, and that was the first post on Dugout Dish, and that was actually 1 year ago today. So it was Jesus Loves Baseball, which was a quote from Paul Goldschmidt, and I moved on to start writing about the Frontier League. I spoke with Tony Busilli of the Washington Wild Things, Elspeth Urbina-Rus with the Evansville Otters, and, of course, people within the Miners organization. So I made a long, big, giant post about them, which is still my pinned tweet on Twitter because it's still one of my favorite things I've ever written. So I started focusing more on independent baseball, and, of course, I branched out with the American Association this season in the summer.
You mentioned the Southern Illinois Miners. Did you get a chance to meet Mike Pinto?
I have not actually met Mike Pinto yet. I've been to multiple games, and we follow each other on Twitter, but we have not had the privilege to actually meet in person yet.
I know, I can tell you from his time in Sioux Falls and in the Northern League, followed by the American Association, he is just a fabulous person. When he's not managing, he's doing motivational speaking, and his motivational speaking also involves breathing fire. So I guarantee you, if you get a chance to talk to Mike, you're going to be thoroughly entertained and educated by it. Just a fabulous guy.
Yeah, he's everyone that I've talked to, and everybody that knows him, they're all like, you've got to meet Mike. And I'm like, you know, I was going to this year, and then everything just kind of happened and threw me for a loop, threw the whole world for a loop. But, yeah.
breathing fire. It's good. There's social distancing then. That's definitely a must. Tell me a little bit about your reaction when the Frontier League decided to not move forward this season. You know, what was that like for you personally?
Well, I had already dealt with the cancellation of the Ohio Valley League, which is a summer league that has a team here in Paducah, Kentucky that I was going to cover. So I had one league down, and I think that took the brunt of my emotions because I angrily painted my kitchen when I found the news out that was canceled. So when the Frontier League news came, I'd had someone within the Frontier League tell me, hey, this is what's probably going to happen. So I was kind of prepared, although I also probably looked like a giant goober because I was like, oh, yeah, they're going to be making an announcement soon. I think they're going to be making an announcement soon. And when it happened, they were like, is that your announcement? Was that what you're excited about? And I'm like, now listen, I just said they were going to make an announcement. I didn't say what they were going to announce. But I had a very long heart-to-heart with the GM of the Washington Wild Things after that, and that's when I found out, of course, that they were going to be doing something. So I was excited about that, but I was completely bummed because I was going to cover a lot of Evansville Otter stuff, a lot of minor stuff, and the Otters were going to have a league of their own night, which would have been 2 weekends ago or last weekend. So I was really upset about that, but I understand why they did it. But of course, Tony and his Washington Wild Things, they're doing their thing right now, which is great, and I've been able to cover them, and so I'm thankful for that. But I was very bummed, very upset.
I have to ask you what angry kitchen painting looks like. I mean, what is that, everything red, or how does that work?
It's actually cream. It's the same color as my bedroom, which is odd, probably. But my parents and I were redoing our kitchen, and my mom was ripping wallpaper. And so she was like, hey, maybe this will help. And she gave me a wet rag and like a wallpaper scraper. And so I just went to town. Like, she had taken all day to get one wall done, and I did, like, the rest of the kitchen in, like, maybe an hour without even thinking. I turned my music on and went to town on that wallpaper.
I like it. I think that sounds awesome. Now, let's talk a little bit about what you've seen in the American Association this year. Six-team league playing. We're about 15, 16 games into the season for most teams. What has been your thoughts early on in the league?
The Canaries have shocked me. Like, I'm so proud of them. And, of course, I love everything the Milwaukee Milkmen do. So I'm really impressed with the teams so far. And I'm excited to see which team takes the lead because, of course, the Milkmen and the Canaries, as of right now, they're neck and neck. So it's going to be a close one. I know the Dogs are currently like 4.5 games behind. So hopefully they can get closer to the top. But, you know, it happens sometimes. That's the beauty of baseball. You can have a hot streak and then the next week it can just go straight into the gutter.
It's interesting, you've kind of watched in Chicago and Milwaukee. Kevin and I had both picked Chicago to win it all this year. What have been your thoughts about the Dogs kind of struggling starting out of the gate?
I'm really shocked by it. I didn't expect that. I expected them to be higher. You know, I don't know what's going on with them, but hopefully soon they can pull out of it and maybe prove us all that, hey, we were right. Lo and behold, they are gonna do something special this year.
Well, we're hoping so because there's probably six managers begging that the two of us don't pick their team anymore after the way things are going this year. So, now, you know, the team I thought, to be honest with you, this season that was going to be the champions was going to be that hub with Chicago and Milwaukee, because I thought these are really the two best teams. It's that they're playing each other for 24 games and only one team is going to come out of there. Those Milwaukee Milkmen look really good right now.
They do. Like, I'm very impressed with the Milkmen and how they're doing right now. I'm not surprised, to be honest, but yeah, they look really good right now. And of course they won against the Saints last night or yesterday. So, and we all know the St. Paul Saints, well, they are the Saints, so.
That's absolutely right. I know that's a good cue in for Kevin right there with Saints stuff.
Right. Yeah, if you read the blog, you'll know where my thoughts are on the Saints right now. They need to skedaddle on back to St. Paul as soon as possible. What do you see as far as the league? Are you going to continue following the league as hard as you have so far once the major league starts up, or where do you see yourself? These tend to probably get back to following the major league product. What's your level of excitement for that at this point?
I'm absolutely stoked for Major League Baseball to come back. And a lot of people have asked me, they're like, hey, are you going to dive headfirst back into Major League Baseball? What are you going to do with indie ball? And then some people are like, they jokingly call me the queen of indie ball, and I'm like, I'm not. I'm definitely not. I'm just like a me, and I yell about independent baseball probably way too much. But
Oh, not possible.
I know I drive my friends that play indie ball. I know I drive them bananas because I'm like, hey, how's the game? What's going on? Like, I went camping this weekend, and we didn't have any service at our camper, but if I walked into the woods and near the water where the lake is, I had perfect service. So, of course, I have friends that play for the Washington Wild Things and the Black Sox. So I was doing my best to, like, watch the game, and it's pure dedication because a frog jumped on my foot, and luckily I did not have on flip-flops, but it still scared me enough that I just kind of flung the frog across the 40-acre wooded field. Yeah, anything for indie ball. That's where my heart is. I will cover some Major League Baseball, but right now I'm still going to go strong with indie ball this season.
Frogs are
can we see possibly making a trip up to catch some games at some parks this summer yet?
I am trying my best to hit up a few games. I'm trying to bounce between maybe Milwaukee or Chicago, especially Chicago because that's the closest to me.
Well, Rob, we know how well easy it can be to get into Chicago, so.
Yeah, we'll talk to them about that one later. So that's kind of an interesting place. It's exciting that there is baseball for us to watch, and it's been great to have American Association Baseball. Have you found yourself looking around, like you're talking about Washington Wild Things did a little kind of summer thing around their team. Sugarland did that. Then you have Pecos League Baseball. Are you kind of following any of these other things that are going on out there?
I am. I actually talked to the commissioner of the American Association a few weeks ago for my Prospect Live piece. When they kicked off the season, of course, I went gung-ho and wrote about it. I'm following the Joliet Slammers. They're doing some stuff like a little hub where they're at, and one of the Canadian teams that used to be with the Can-Am League and is doing something. So I'm bouncing. I think my Twitter is pretty much just like all indie ball teams, and I'm trying my best just to like continue to see what's going on with each one of them. It can be a lot for one person sometimes, but I'm a glutton for it. I love it. And I started a piece on Dugout Dish. It's a rundown of every league and what's going on. Of course, I've got to update it since I went camping. Things have changed, but it just gave a rundown for people who follow Dugout Dish and follow me on Twitter. They can see what's going on with each league. So that's helped a lot.
How have you found the level, like the talent level in the Frontier League, you know, trying to go with a lot of younger guys? How do you find the brand of baseball and then, the enjoyment of watching games at that level?
The talent honestly surprises me sometimes. Some of the guys that are playing in the league, they're truly incredible. And I've had friends that have went on to be signed by minor league teams, and just to be able to see that progress from them grinding on the field in indie ball and to make it into minor league baseball, like, that's beauty. That's the beautiful part of indie ball. And my dad and I often talk about how indie ball is what could possibly go on to grow the game. Like, of course, everyone looks at Major League Baseball, and that's the end-all. That's end-all be-all of baseball. But there's indie ball, and, of course, it's not as big as Major League Baseball or even Minor League Baseball in certain parts. But children can go to an indie game, and they can actually have conversations with their favorite players. They can fall in love with a game there. They can actually be a part of it. And I think that gets lost in Major League Baseball and the talent. These kids can go, they can fall in love with the game, and they can see these guys, and they're like, hey, I want to do that. I can do that. Instead of, standing at the end of a dugout at a Major League Baseball game and just hoping and praying that they actually might get a smile from their favorite player on that team. And so I ultimately think the talent is going to continue to grow, especially with minor league teams on the chopping block. There's so many guys that will go to indie ball, and like I've been told previously that indie ball will not look the same in the coming years because of everything that's going on with major league and minor league baseball. So I can only hope that the talent continues to grow and the game continues to grow and everyone falls in love with indie ball as much as I have, because that's truly, I always joke that I want to advocate for it, but I think I do every day. I think if I have a conversation with someone every day, I'm like, well, do you know about indie ball? Because let me guide you. I can find you a team to like.
I often, getting back to what you were just talking about, I often tell the story back when indie ball just started. I used to hook up my carriage to the horses and go, just kidding. I would go to Saints games, and the thing I would do before a game was stop by at the local newsstand and pick up Baseball America. And I would sit there and just look through every team's statistics, because, there is no stats on the internet yet. And you would just look. I would just be fascinated by, okay, cool, this Evan Millar looks like he's playing well in Class A for Florida. And I would just kill all this time sitting in the parking lot before the ball game, just looking up to see where all these former Northern League guys, see how they're doing in organizations. And like you said, it's fun to see a guy that you saw at an independent ballpark work their way up towards potentially being a major leaguer.
At the Blue Chelsea?
Oh, no, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
I can't bore everybody with the story.
No, I agree. I truly, I think that's one of the beauties of baseball is these guys, they can be released from a minor league team. They can have an injury that prevents them from going further, and they find themselves in independent baseball, and yet they have another chance. They have another shot. And even if they don't make it back into an affiliated team or even to the show, they still get to live out their dream. They still get to play professional baseball. And a lot of people often still look at indie ball as like a beer league, as a Sunday softball game, and it's not that way anymore. It's highly competitive, and I know teams that if a guy doesn't do what he's supposed to in like maybe 3 or 4 games, then he's gotta, you know, he's gonna sit the bench, and then the next thing you know, he's on the transactions list as released. And I've seen that happen with multiple guys. So I think the misconception of people seeing it as a one way and not seeing it the way it is, hopefully that can change soon.
You know, as you were talking about the contraction in minor league baseball, I'm sad to see this go, but I also look at that there's going to be so many opportunities for independent teams to take over these ballparks and join, you know, the Frontier League or the American Association. We're down to kind of 4 major independent leagues. How do you see that directly affecting the Frontier League? They expanded in with the Can-Am League. Could you see that being 16, 18, maybe even 20 teams at some point?
I honestly think they could. I think they could really do it. I know that there's opportunity. I mean, there's opportunity here in Kentucky for them to have more than just the Florence Y'alls. I still want to call them the Florence Freedom. I cannot get that in my head, which is weird because I say y'all in every other sentence most of the time. But I still cannot get it in my head. Like, I was writing it the other day, and I was just like, wait a minute, that's not right. But I do. I think that the Frontier League could actually benefit from it. And because there's, I think, the Johnson City, Tennessee Cardinals are one of them, so that would be interesting to see if we could get a Tennessee team, because, you know, that would be nice to see indie ball in Tennessee and just continue to grow. So I think the Frontier League could benefit, honestly.
And what did you think about the expansion of bringing in the Can-Am League? What did you think about that?
I was very excited because I know a lot of guys that were going to have to move on to another league or just retire because of the age limit in the Frontier League. And, of course, when they brought in the Can-Am League, a lot of rules changed, including the way they look at age. So that's great because there are so many guys that are talented that are in their late 20s, early 30s, and so they still get a chance and they still get to be with their team that they've been with. So I'm excited about that. And the last time I talked to the front office, they hadn't made any changes for the 2021 season because, of course, there's a lot of guys that are older, so I wanted to know, but they really didn't tell me much because I was like, hey, are you guys going to let the older guys play again next year? But, you know, that was a few months ago, and they hadn't canceled the season yet, so they didn't have much to be able to give me at that point.
Now, if you'll excuse my ignorance here a little bit, I have not covered Frontier League baseball as actively. A lot of guys have come out of the Frontier League to play in the American Association. A personal favorite of Kevin and mine is Mike Devine, pitching with the Saints. Mm-hmm. Had a couple of great years there, and I think in Evansville, as a matter of fact. If you talked about American Association baseball, there's like 5 or 6 guys that everybody would know. Reggie Abercrombie and Nate Sampson, guys like this. Are there people in the Frontier League that you say, wow, these 5 or 6 guys define Frontier League baseball?
Honestly, probably I'm going to get yelled at if any of my friends listen to this and I don't name them. So I'm going to be unprepared for this. But, probably Zach Strecker. He's the closer for the Washington Wild Things. He's fantastic. Nolan Early with the Southern Illinois Miners, his brother, and he actually played for the Miners for a little bit together. Or no, not together. They missed each other. And Nolan actually played for the Milwaukee Milkmen last year. So he was coming back to the Miners this year. He's fantastic. Who else? Oh, gosh. Ryan Cox with the Wild Things, he's great. Joe Jones, he's not with the Frontier League right now, but he's working his way back to the Frontier League. He was with the Wild Things last year. David Cronin with the Evansville Otters, Hunter Colin with the Evansville Otters. Oh, gosh. I know I'm going to forget people, but yes, especially Strecker. Zach Strecker is fantastic.
Excellent. Now, I have to kind of ask you about this, Chelsea, because I think you said you were from Paducah and you were voting for the Cardinals. I mean, aren't you like 10 minutes away from Cincinnati? How does that work?
I am actually closer to St. Louis.
You are? Okay.
I am in the western part of Kentucky. I'm 2 hours away from St. Louis and 5 hours away from Chicago. So I actually grew up a New York Mets fan because my love for Mike Piazza was greater than most things when I was younger. And I liked the Cardinals, but they weren't my team until last year. I started Dugout Dish in July of 2019. In 2018, I went through a divorce, and then 2019, I lost my dog. He actually threw a clot to his brain, and he was in my parents' bed. So in order to grieve, I took my two loves of writing and baseball, and I used that as a grieving technique. I never in a million years thought I would be able to live out my dream, because when I was little, I'd watch Baseball Tonight all the time, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to be on there. That's my goal. I'm going to work for Baseball Tonight one day. I finally took back the goals and the dreams I had when I was younger and went with it. I created Dugout Dish, and I never imagined. But last year, I started watching a lot of Cardinals games, and I love watching Paul DeJong, Colton Wong. They are amazing when they're on the field together. Harrison Bader, I know a lot of people get so mad at him when he's at the plate, but his defense is just spectacular. He's one of the nicest human beings. So is Paul DeJong. I've had conversations with him, and he is just like, it's so down to earth. But my faith is really big with me. And when we were at Christian Day last year, one of my favorite verses is Isaiah 41:10. And Matt Leaders was talking. He was giving his testimony. And of course, I'm always one to look for signs. I'm always like, where's my sign? Where's my sign? And I had no idea what I was going to write for Dugout's first post. So I was like, Maybe this could be it. And Matt Leader said that his favorite verse was the verse that I actually used to help me when I lost my dog. And so I'm sitting at Busch Stadium in literally 100-degree weather with the sun beaming down, and Busch is basically empty except for maybe 50 people. And I'm just like, nope, I'm not going to cry. I'm not going to cry. And Paul Goldschmidt was like, Jesus loves baseball. And at that moment, I was just like, you know what? I really love the Cardinals. Like, I fell in love with that team last year, and I'm very thankful for them because I've been given opportunities that I never thought were ever possible because of them. And I actually was able to cover the St. Louis Cardinals in January at their winter warm-up, which is their fan fest. I got to be in the press room. I was credentialed for it. Got to ask Paul DeJong a question, and then awkwardly, I got to meet him in the autograph line 5 minutes later because I bought autograph tickets for myself and my family before I knew I was credentialed. So when I walked up to him, he was like, hey, fancy meeting you here. And I'm like, oh, hey. So I had to explain to him why I was doing both. And I was able to meet Ozzie Smith, and I love the Cardinals at this point. So it's weird because my dad is a diehard Braves fan. Like, he has his Freddie Freeman jersey on right now downstairs. Yeah, it's by all means I should be a Braves fan because of my dad, but I like him, but my heart's with the Cardinals and a few other teams, but the Cardinals are number one.
Awesome. Well, you know, Chelsea, we always allow our guests to give us kind of a final thought to give our fans some kind of inspirational thing, or just something they should think about out there. So before we have you head out today, do you have a final thought you'd like to share with our audience?
Oh, gosh.
Pressure.
I'm not good under pressure. No. honestly, I've been here lately. I've been really doing a lot of soul searching, and life is way too short for someone not to enjoy what they do and someone to not enjoy life. And so I ask everyone to enjoy life and try to make the most of it, even in times like this when the world isn't so friendly and kind. Just try to be kind to one another, and hopefully we'll all, you know, there'll be a rainbow and a pot of gold at the end of the tunnel before this year is over.
That's awesome. Chelsea, thanks for joining us this week.
Thank you guys for having me.
Well, it was great having Chelsea Ladd on the show, but obviously there's great stuff going on around the American Association, and so Kevin and I want to pick up from there. And let's talk about the kind of the crow we have to start eating to begin with here is the Sioux Falls Canaries and the Milwaukee Milkmen are leading the American Association. Kevin, I think, you know, let's just, you know, take it a little slap in the face right off the bat and say our predictions are not looking particularly good at this point.
No, that's, I don't know if there's a Vegas betting line at all on the American Association, and if there is, I think we best be staying away from the casinos at this point, because it's been pretty brutal. I got a feeling if we show our faces in Chicago, we might have the mustard and ketchup guns positioned squarely at our heads, because the curse has once again reared its ugly head as the Chicago Dogs have gone careening towards last place.
You know, it's funny, because after my article came out predicting them to win it all, I don't remember who this was, but somebody had sent me a message on Facebook saying, "Does Butch Hobson know you predicted him? Like, man, he's going to be mad when he knows." And I think if he knew now, he would be pretty disappointed in the two of us. Let's talk about those Dogs for just a minute, Kevin, because despite losing that game yesterday, and I know how that had to be kind of a heartbreaker for them, they have to feel pretty good about Luke Westfall coming back.
Right, that's a huge addition for them. And, you know, for one of the reasons we talked about them as a contender this year was because of that pitching staff and all the Major League alumni arms that were going to be part of it. And frankly, if you look at the numbers, pitching hasn't been that great. And I think it's been said by others too, and maybe it's going to take those guys a while to kind of get back in their form too. They're probably used to a regular spring training. But boy, you throw Luke Westfall in there, and if he can do the kind of things he did last year for the Dogs and the Major League arms, you go, maybe there's hope for those Dogs. Yeah, maybe we're not going to sound as dumb as we do right now.
Well, you know, the thing about it was it looked like some of their main bats that they were, you know, that we've counted on over the years and expected to come up with big numbers have just taken a little time to get going. And Victor Roach is just an example to me of that. I know the batting average is still, you know, down a little bit below 200, and we haven't seen Victor Roach that we saw last year, but it looks like he looks a little bit more comfortable at the plate. You know, he had an 0-for-5 game yesterday, but in the three games before that was 5-of-13. And I'm starting to see the guy who hit 24 homers last year and was driving in 85 runs or whatever it wound up being. This, if he gets some swinging going, a couple of guys on this team are really producing, and we're just kind of waiting, it looks like, for guys to get it together right now.
Yeah, I think right now with the way Roach has struggled, right off the bat this season, we're kind of seeing how big of a impact player Keon Barnum really was, where maybe Roach isn't getting the pitches to see that he did last year when people were pitching around Barnum and then having to face Roach instead.
The one part of this team that I'm interested to see happen, you know, there's some guys on here. Casey Hobson is going to hit at some point. And we know Tony Roselli's had great seasons here. And Victor Roach, we know, is going to produce. He went with the two young catchers, Ryan Hogg and Garrett Hope. Both of them have really struggled offensively. And I wonder if there's a point where he says to himself, am I satisfied enough with their catching ability that the way they're handling the staff, I'm going to ride with these guys, or can I give away an out every time these guys come to the plate? Because, you know, both of them are hitting below 150, and I don't really see them getting much higher than that, to be honest with you. So, that I think is a real interesting decision there for Butch.
Well, yeah, you're what, 14, I think for them, 14 games into the season, and that's about the 25% into the season. Can you really dedicate that much more time for guys that aren't producing? But then is there, you know, as we're talking about in this weird season, if you go and get a catcher, you gotta sign the guy, you gotta put him through the COVID protocol, and it's just not as easy as just nabbing the guy off of a taxi squad. So if Hobson's going to be making a move, he might have to make a move on that very soon.
Well, let's move on to the Fargo Moorhead Redhawks, who got took 2 out of 3 down there in Chicago, had a huge victory last night that ran a little bit late into the evening there. I asked Chris Coast about this on the show today, about how much of an impact having a victory like that has, and then you got a day off. Does that kind of wear off? And he was telling me he's not really sure how that impacts. I'd like kind of what your thoughts on that. If you're a player, what do you think about you battle back in the ninth inning to win a huge game down there in Chicago, then you have a huge bus ride home and you get the day off and you're back out. Does any of that momentum carry forward, do you think?
I think at this point, I think the rest matters more than momentum itself. And you still know that you won a big game in Chicago, but I really, would you want to have that big win in Chicago, which went to about, I think, damn near 11 o'clock Central Time, then the long bus ride home, and then having to lace them up and play right away again today? I think at this point you take rest over the momentum, and they'll be ready to go with the big week ahead of them. We'll talk about that a little later.
Interestingly enough, that Chris Coast had the same thoughts as you. So see, you're thinking along the same lines as a World Series champion. So got to feel pretty good about that, Kevin. Cito Culver got released this week, and I'm not sure if there's an injury to this or what the situation. I mean, he was having a pretty decent season at 258, and had made a few errors there at the shortstop position, but this was their top guy that they had chosen in the dispersal draft. So I'm not sure if this is an injury at this point, but that looks to be a little bit bigger loss than you might have thought, just because of where he was picked in that draft.
Right. You know, some teams have had those dispersal guys carry them, and other teams have had very minimal impact. So I think it's on a per-case basis, but like I said, we're not privy to know exactly what the basis for the release is, but we know that the Red Hawks will go soldiering on without him.
They bring in Ryan Flores. Came over from drafted by Winnipeg. Am I right about that? Where did he get drafted by? Or did Flores sign with somebody else? Wait a minute, I got to look this up. Let me see before I have myself in the wrong pathway. Didn't he come into? Yeah, he did. He signed here with Fargo. He was released by. Who was Ryan drafted by in the dispersal
draft? I thought Winnipeg.
That's what I thought. Okay, I was trying to talk myself out of that. See? So this is, you know, I like this guy. And I know he's 27, and, you know, you'd think kind of a reliever would have put it together at this point. But this guy is very young in his development in a lot of ways. And I feel like he's got just great stuff. He's just hard on himself. And I wonder what kind of great influence that Chris Coast will have on him, because Steve Montgomery obviously had great rapport with him and was able to get, you know, three outstanding seasons out of him. So I think a big part of this is going to be what Chris can do. And, you know, if there's a guy out there right now managing in this league who looks like he could be a person who could work with a guy who's inside his head too much, I would think Chris Coase is that guy.
Well, you know, you have to wonder up in Fargo. I mean, we all know Jeff Bittiger is a scout for Oakland, and he's making personnel moves for Fargo, too. You have to wonder, right now, scouts are not allowed on the road. Maybe a guy like, if Jeff Bittiger had like a few days to just work with Flores on his mental game, and maybe with his mechanics, that what kind of a difference that can make, too, because I Bittiger was arguably one of the best independent league baseball pitchers of all time.
Very good point.
I don't know where Bittiger is. He might be out in California or somewhere else. But boy, I could just imagine if he chose to be in Fargo and worked with a guy like Ryan Flores, what kind of impact that Bitt could have on him.
Well, let's head on to the St. Paul Saints, and let's begin with the fact that we chose our This Week in the Association and the Minor League Sports Report chose our American Association Player and Pitcher of the Week. The St. Paul Saints have the sweep. Let's start with Chesney Young, who had quite an impressive week, hitting over 500, drove in, I think, 8 runs during the week there. A guy very deserving of the award.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just kind of hearing the voices right now come out of Cleburne with that call. Home cooking on that one. Home cooking. Because I follow the Saints, and it was a Saints sweep. But, you know, you look around, I know the league had a different look on that. But, wow, I mean, Young started out 3 hit games in a row versus the Goliaths and kept it going throughout the weekend. I mean, how can you argue with that?
You know, I have to say to fans out there that whenever Kevin chooses a Saints player for something, there's always an attempt by him to talk himself out of it. Okay, so
always.
So fans out there are thinking the guy's in the tank for the Saints. I really want to tell this to you honestly. He's looking for a reason not to choose the Saints guy. So the Saints guy not only has to have a good week, he's got to have a sensational week because Kevin is trying to find some way to get around that so it doesn't look like he's in the tank for the team. So trust me when I say this is a legitimate effort by Chesney Young that deserved to be player of the week. You said the league chose Drew Ward, who had a nice week as well, homered 3 times during the week and drove in 7 runs, scored 8 runs during the week, had a great week for them. But, you know, you just can't look, you know, spit on 565. I'm sorry, you just can't.
Right, and Mikey Reynolds was right behind him, the guy that we picked for player of the week last week. Tell you what, in the past, there's probably been Saints that have been cheated out of getting player of the week just because I just wouldn't vote for them. So.
And we did talk you out of that because Tom Shea was our player of the week last week, see? So now you don't have to feel bad there. But we're back on the pitcher of the week, Mike Devine, who had clearly the best start of any pitcher this last 7 days, tossing a fantastic game, earning a no decision against the Milwaukee Milkmen where he struck out 10. There's just nobody else to choose that top that week.
You know, Devine is starting for the first time, I think, since 2016. And he's been great out of the bullpen for the last few years, but the first two starts for him were very rocky. And at that point, you had to start wondering, okay, how long is this experiment with being in the rotation going to last? But, yeah, just a sensational start against the Milkmen on Friday night. A shame he didn't get a win out, but he definitely deserved it. And I mean, I know you know Mike from his time in Wichita, and you've told me just how good of a guy he is. So I was really happy to see him have a start like that, and it's good to see that he was recognized by the league and by us.
You know, there's a part to this too that I think is really important, that his start in particular. Now they lost this game. I understand that. Milwaukee wound up winning in 10 innings, and that's, you know, kind of a disappointment that his start got wasted that way. But if this team is going to go a long way, if they're going to try to repeat or at least get one of those two playoff spots, they need some guys to step up in that starting rotation right now. Eddie Medina is kind of struggling early on, and we haven't got to see Spencer Jones or Nick Belzer, you know, put in big innings, because I'm assuming they're building themselves up at this point. And to me, that was the biggest start of the week, because it told George Samus that he could rely on this guy against an outstanding starting lineup to give him seven or solid outstanding innings. And I think that was just a message that had to rain through that Saints dugout.
Right. And Medina had looked better in his last start. Matt Solter right now leads the entire league in wins with 3. So if you get Solter, Medina, and Devine going, Ryan Zimmerman has proven himself to be a really good pitcher in this league. He had a great outing last Sunday. I know, I think he kind of hit the wall a little bit last Saturday night. Matt Quintana is a number 5 guy. He's been a little bit rocky, and, you know, he might be hearing footsteps from Spencer Jones or Nick Belzer for that number 5 spot in the rotation. So there's still a chance the Saints' rotation could be really good, but with the Saints, right now they lead a lot of league categories in hitting. But, like I said on last week's show, it's been a roller coaster. One night it's 16 runs, next night it's 2. It's just, you're not getting a consistent offensive output from them night to night up and down the lineup. It's been really strange that way.
You know, one guy that's been kind of a surprise for me this season has been Torrey Alexander. This was a guy was the extra outfielder last year. It was in the Frontier League really to start out the season before the St. Paul Saints reacquired him. And, man, 371 batting average through 11 games, 3 of 6 in the last couple of games. This guy has been – he reminded me last year, like the Dan Modell. You know, Dan Modell came in as kind of the extra outfielder, and then all of a sudden was a star. And I'm starting to see that Alexander, who was kind of a no-name guy, all of a sudden could be one of the most formidable guys in this lineup.
I was watching Saints Live with Sean Aaronson, and Sean talked extensively about Torrey Alexander one afternoon, and Sean said that the team just loves Torrey Alexander. And that's he's a young, raw talent. I talked to George Samus about him last summer, and George felt bad because Alexander wasn't playing him. We both agreed he needed to get to somewhere like the Frontier League where he could play every day. Well, that was the plan this year, but obviously with COVID-19, plans change. So it's good that if he's back here, he's getting at bats and he's getting a chance to shine. And like I said, when you got a guy that all the guys like having around, and you start seeing results. Who knows what the limits are for this guy?
Absolutely, I'm in agreement with you on that, because he has been a real shot in the arm to that lineup. And sometimes it's just because a guy didn't get a shot, really never had the opportunity to get at bats, you don't appreciate how good he is, and that this could be a serious find for George Samus. No doubt about that. Well, Kevin, let's jump to the Winnipeg Goldeyes, who after that amazing start against the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks are starting to kind of fall back to earth here a little bit. But thanks to Kevin Lachance in the last couple of games, that he's kind of bailed them out and gotten them a couple of victories with some big hits. So this team is still, as dangerous as it gets offensively.
Right. Yeah, we saw that in the series in Sioux Falls against the Saints also earlier in the week. Well, we got to talk about Mitchell Lamson, though. We were talking about this week in the association. James, wow, did we do a number on him, huh?
Yeah, he got hit pretty hard by the Saints, a 9-run inning before he finally left in that loss against St. Paul. So I was actually looking this up a little bit after that. I think it was if you took the 2 starts he had before that one this season, I think you had to go like 5 or 6 starts into last year and combine those 7 starts to get 9 runs out of him. It was like, this is 2 months to Mitch Lamson. I don't know what they figured out, but boy, that he could not get those final outs in that inning, and it was just the Saints just pummeled him, and I was like, wow, this is unbelievable to watch. You know, he's such a veteran. You know, this isn't going to really carry over into the next game, but it's got to be to other teams to say, hey, if he can be hit, we've seen he can be hit, we can hit this guy too.
Right. Yeah, he's shown that he truly is healing. I mean, he's been a great pitcher in this league for 3-4 years. But yeah, it was definitely a stunning result on Tuesday. Yeah, I believe it was Tuesday night.
Now, I understand that this has partially been because they've had a few bad starts between them. But if you asked me at the starting of the season that, you know, almost 3 weeks into the year, that Kevin McGovern, Frank Duncan, and Mitch Lamson were all going to have ERAs over 5, I'd have told you must be smoking crack or something. But so do you think there's any concern over in that Winnipeg locker room right now that they're saying, wow, this could get ugly?
I think that whatever doubt there was probably eased up a bit yesterday with McGovern having a solid start against the Canaries and what ended up being a series deciding victory for the Gold Eyes. So I think he definitely got to be encouraged by that. The fact these guys are veterans and they do know how to bounce back, so I don't think there's any need for the Gold Eyes to be worried at this point.
A guy who's working himself towards Player of the Month honors, as we'll be talking about here in another week or so, Logan Hill. We talked a little bit about him last week, that a Hill seems to be a big winner there in Winnipeg. And this guy just continues to be kind of a big-time player for this team, tied for that league lead in homers with 3. Just 8 RBI, but 16 runs scored. And if you add in Darnell Sweeney, who's really swinging a big bat for this team now. I mean, this was the top pick by Winnipeg in the dispersal draft, and I was kind of hemming and hawing about that pick, but boy, he's sure proving why he was a former major leaguer. And if you add in Martin and Darvall, LeChance with his big hits this week, this is still a team that if you can just get your starter to give up 4 or 5 runs a night, you know they can hit for you and score runs.
I think the telling thing on the Winnipeg lineup is this: Wes Darvall is hitting 8th in that lineup. We all know what Wes Darvall has done in this league, and he's in 8th in that lineup. That tells you what kind of quality they have in that batting order from top to bottom.
I think it tells you a lot about him individually, too. You know, this is a guy who was hitting in the top 5 in that lineup in all of their championship runs, and he's willing to move to the 8th spot. Tells you what a class guy this is and what a team-oriented guy that he is. And you know, you could say whatever you want about Rick Forney, okay? And we've talked about some stuff, speculation that's been said, but clearly his guys listen and have respect enough for their manager to say, if you want me here, that's where I'll play.
Right. All these years, too, Forney has been a winning man. They don't really have any sort of right to doubt his lineup making ability.
Well, I'm in a quandary because they're tied here at first, and I really like to say the first-place Milwaukee Milkmen and the first-place Sioux Falls Canaries. So we'll start with the first-place Milwaukee Milkmen, who finally are starting to get some...
They're both bragging about it, so...
And they should be. Let's talk a little bit about some of the guys that were struggling early on. Chase Simpson then sat out for a week with an inner ear infection. Brett Vertigan was struggling early on, is really starting to swing the bat now. Zach Naryer has his average up to 250. They were winning already without getting a lot of big-time performances out of their guys, and now all of a sudden those guys are starting to get in the groove. Mason Davis has had some big hits and hasn't even really got his average going yet. This is a scary lineup, Kevin.
Yeah, we knew that. We knew that we're talking about teams that won in the dispersal draft, and you know, the Milkmen are showing why they came out. I mean, we didn't even mention it, that Dylan is sitting 296.
Yeah.
Just doing Dylan Tice like things. I know the thing they're excited about in Milwaukee was the weekend that their first baseman David Washington had, where he did 3 home runs over the weekend. I know they were expecting him to be a major power hitter, and it just wasn't happening for a while. But now Boy, I mean, if you get him hitting in a lineup where you got McAvert again, if you get Chase Simpson, if you get back in the lineup from his inner ear infection, and you get Adam Walker still consistently in the ball in the park, man, I mean, it's quite a lineup they have there. And we talked about it because they needed a good lineup if they were going to be a hub mate with Chicago who had all that pitching. So
they're getting it now. And you know, to me, the thing that this lineup that I would just, if there's any concern that Anthony Barone has at this point, it's that, you know, five guys have come up with their 12 homers. So you're getting nothing else in terms of the long ball from some guys who've had some decent numbers for home runs. Chase Simpson doesn't have any home runs this year, and Brett Vertigan doesn't have any yet. I understand Simpson's only been in five games at this point, but you're not getting throughout the lineup, and I think that's got to be something he's, you know, kind of tinkering around with, because, you know, you need some big homers from everybody. You can't count on Adam Walker and David Washington to hit them all for you. So you're going to have to see some of these guys start to put up some bigger numbers for them. And I'm interested to see what he does to try to produce that.
Well, you know, I'm just checking out the stats here. Is this right? Does Mason Davis already have 17 RBIs?
Yes, he does. We're going to talk about that here in a little bit, about the RBI numbers for some guys. But, yes, he's having quite a year already. So we'll come back to that here in a little bit.
He's such a good hard player to – it's just fun. It's fun to watch him play because, you know, he just loves the game and he just plays – hard, plays through a lot of injuries, and just continues to produce.
Yeah, just a great young man.
I know Dan Vaughn, who gets to follow him in Kansas City, just loves the guy.
Well, the Milkman pitching staff was looking pretty good, and then they had some news today that I think we got to talk about a little bit here, is six-year major leaguer Alvarez Alvarez Henderson.
On,
I get it out. Man, I'm tongue-tied today, Kevin.
Henderson Alvarez.
Yeah, Henderson Alvarez. There we go. Joined the pitching staff here. And, you know, 3.82 career ERA in the major leagues. Guy tossed a no-hitter. This is a guy who, you know, the pitching staff was already good, and all they did was just get better today.
Right, I mean, that's a huge get for Milwaukee. I don't know what, as far as being stretched out to Alvarez is. I don't know if he'll start right away and have to get eased into his innings, or if he's going to be able to go out and give you five or six innings right away. But regardless, that's a huge find for the Milkman.
The one thing I thought they had to be pretty happy about, Kevin, was how well Ryan Kuzmal pitched yesterday.
Well, I think Kuzmal was probably in a similar position of what we were talking about with Mike Devine, where it was time to either prove something or head back to the bullpen. So Kuzmal got the job done against the Saints, and it's got to be a shot in the arm for the Milkman pitching staff.
Well, let's move on to the other first-place team, the Sioux Falls Canaries. Right now, Damick Tomche still just killing the ball right now. This team is just they're doing everything in the right way to win the Sioux Falls Canaries. They're getting good enough pitching. The bullpen has been outstanding. Keaton Steele, a guy that you were talking about that would wind up being the closer for the team, and he has been, and he's been great.
Yeah, boy, what a game they had in Chicago on Thursday night, huh?
Absolutely.
A game like that makes me wish that there was a West Coast game in the American Association nightly where you could tune in for like a 9:30 first pitch and you could watch it all the way up to midnight. Because that was just an entertaining game. It's nice that I like having all the games on American Association Baseball TV, but it's like after like 10 o'clock, it's like, oh, all right, there's nothing to watch now. So having the game run that late, I know for the players it was a grind, and I'm sure for Sam Brief and Carter with the old calling the game, I'm sure they're getting a bit tired too. But as a fan, oh, I was enjoying it.
Sensational ball game. I mean, that was just an exciting game from start to finish. And you know, there were a lot of really good games this week. We'll come back and talk about that here in a minute. Let's do a little bit more with Sioux Falls. Besides, the bullpen has been really outstanding for them, and they're getting good enough starting pitching right now. So it really falls on the lineup to ensure that they're producing, providing the run support so that they're able to win games. And everybody that you expect to be hitting on this team, you know, a Jabari Henry, a Mike Hart, and Andrew Ealy's even hitting better than I even thought this season, a Lay Lago. Everybody who's supposed to be doing what they're, you know, putting up the numbers, they're doing that, Kevin.
Go figure that Lago is only the second best batting average on that team.
Yeah, man, what's wrong with him? And he's gonna he's gonna slump or something, man. He's just not producing like we expect. What's wrong with that dude?
So, it is good to see a guy like Jabari Henry go bouncing back, a 283 average and 3 homers, 11 RBIs after a couple. So yeah. That's a good story there too.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you mentioned that because I had talked with Mike Meyer about that last Thursday, and he was saying guys had a foot injury that has been the primary cause of him not having big numbers over the last couple of years. And, you know, I guess we don't appreciate that as much from a fan standpoint or even, you know, covering the league, that how much those kind of injuries can hamper a guy. But, boy, now that he's healthy, he just looks really comfortable. And they're doing a smart thing and just DHing him now. So, you know, come 40 games from now, 30 games from now, when they're, you know, down the last 15, 20 games of the season, he's going to be ready to go.
Right. A shorter season, too, I think, helps. You don't have the 100-game grind where you're just playing 60, and yeah, he'll be fresh come September.
Well, Kevin, let's talk a little bit about stuff, kind of trends going on. And you mentioned a little bit about this, about Mason Davis already having 17 RBI this season. 3 guys with 17 RBI at this point already in, you know, 14, 15 games for that. And what's surprising to me, you know, the run production has been up some, the ERAs are a little high in the league, but these are the guys who are driving home runs are just being really consistent. You know, a Mason Davis has 2 RBI this night and 1 the next, and, you know, 2 a couple nights later. It's these guys are not just putting up 7 RBI nights. It's they're consistently putting them on the board.
Right, and if you look at the league leaders, it's not like they're not guys that got, like, you know, like 8 home runs in 16 games. Your league leader right now in home runs has 3. So, yeah, those guys, they're just putting the ball in the plate and getting out of it as opposed to knocking the ball at the ballpark or taking advantage of ballpark with favorable wind conditions such as a bird cage. So, it's guys just doing the right things in their bats.
And I think that makes the league a lot more fun to watch, is because it isn't 17 to 14 games. We've seen a few of those this season, but it hasn't been, you know, 2 out of every 3 games are high-scoring affairs. We've seen some very good pitching performances as well. So these guys are hitting because the talent level is just that good this year.
Right, which God bless the pitchers. Making for some tough nights for them, but... But yeah, and that even helps you as the pitchers get more into a groove too. But you know, what you gotta look at too is that it's tougher for these pitchers. The fewer teams in the league, they're facing the same team multiple times during the year. So these teams must be mix up your repertoire really good. It's you know, when you're facing the same team the 5th time of the year, what can you really throw them that they haven't seen yet?
And you're just 25 games into the season. You know, it's not even like you've had, you know, it's over 60 or 80 games or something. You could have faced the same team 4 or 5 times, and you're only just a third of the way through. So that's a great dynamic that you're talking about there. And pitchers are still trying to work up their longevity here to stay in games and strength to, you know, endurance about this here. So, we're obviously seeing that the hitters are a little bit ahead of the pitchers right now, but, you know, come a couple of weeks from now or 3 weeks from now, this should even out, I would hope.
Right. Like, I think this week, Eddie Medina will be facing the Canaries for the 3rd and 4th times this year.
That's just crazy. Absolutely crazy right now. So, Well, Kevin, let's talk about a little of the things that are going on around the league right now. We've seen some interesting transactions. We mentioned Ryan Flores signing there with Fargo after being released. We've seen the move around now. The guys who've been released, we saw Tanner Keast got released by the Saints and was signed by Fargo. There's been a couple of guys that have been in that situation that have been with another team, signed with somebody else after being released. So I guess the kind of the big fear about risking bringing in a guy because of the COVID thing is not as much of a concern, or it's just that they've already gone through all this testing with another team and it's just not a big deal.
Right, they're just kind of, you know, I think you're going to see guys get recycled more within the league as opposed to bringing a guy that would have to go through all the protocol just to get a chance to play.
Now, my apologies for not mentioning the biggest signing of the week. St. Paul, Kevin and I joked about 2 weeks ago about there was a young man playing short who didn't have a place to play. And St. Paul looked like the perfect stopping point for him there. And so Nate Sampson, St. Paul Saint.
I swear I talked to somebody about Sampson being a good fit in St. Paul. And I don't remember who or where, but I wish I could remember. Because I was... As soon as I saw that the Mexican League wasn't happening, I thought, you know, gosh, Sampson would be a nice way to fill a shortstop spot for St. Paul. I think, though, Sampson needs to go back to his at-bat music last year with Sioux City. I know he's struggling a bit to start off, and I'm sure he's still working on getting his groove, but I don't know, it could be the at-bat music. I know he changed it up, so... I swear, every time I hear High Hopes, I think of Nate Sampson.
Well, you know, Nate Sampson has been a personal favorite of mine for 5-6 years now. Great guy. It's kind of just odd to see him in a Saints uniform, though. That's still taking a little work, Kevin. I got to tell you the truth.
Yeah, it's just one of those guys, as I think we've talked about before, where, like, on the major league level, it was strange. I imagine it'd be strange for Twins fans in the 60s when Harmon Killebrew ended up at the Kansas City Royals. It just doesn't look right. Or the Yankee, it just...
Well, you know, it's good to see him playing. And we know that Nate Sampson is going to wind up producing here at some point. So we're not going to... Nobody's going to be stressed out if he's in the, you know, the hundreds or something for a week or so.
And he's a guy that's been through the grind of some playoff runs where I think he'll be the guy that can be a leader like Brady Shoemaker was last year for St. Paul, where just like Shoemaker, probably not a rah-rah guy, but a guy that goes about his business the right way that guys can emulate.
I agree with you completely. Well, Kevin, let's talk a little bit about outside the American Association for a moment, because my feeling is there's a couple leagues out there that have really wasted their opportunities for getting some attention. And this Sugarland Skeeters League, the Constellation Energy League, I guess is what they're calling it, has some outstanding talent, has some big names involved in managing and playing in this thing. American Association guys, I didn't realize Tommy Collier until I was writing about this a couple weeks ago. Tommy Collier pitching down there in this league right there. So, I mean, they have some big names out there and stuff. Pecos League is having some great games. They've had some fantastic battles this season, but they're charging people per game and a pretty decent amount of money too. I just thought they're just throwing their opportunity to draw people in.
Yeah, I saw some of that on Facebook on the Independent Baseball Chat too about some of the ticket prices for these little throw-together leagues they have, and I just thought, wow, that's insane. But I suppose if you're going to get guys that are professional ball players, they're not going to do it for free, but and you only got so many games in which to draw money, but boy, you're asking for a lot from the fans in that case.
I like what the American Association did, which was just coming out with a flat fee and letting people watch as many games as they wanted to out there. And I thought, well, you know, if you wanted to, let's just say in the Pecos League, if you wanted to say, you know, it's $100 to watch the entire season out there. Okay, wow. So that'd be 56 games. Okay, well, that's a, I would consider that, seriously consider that, overpaying $6 a game. You know, I mean, I'm thinking $6 a game at 56 games. I'm not going to spend $350. I mean, I'm not. And I think you're trying to draw attention to yourself right now, and the way you do that is by more people watching your product.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, too, what MLB is charging as far as MLB.TV for the limited season they're going to have. I mean, granted, I'm a T-Mobile subscriber. But be interesting to see what they charge. But I know it's I know it'd be a lot less than what the Pecos League is charging if you buy a per game basis. Holy smokes!
$12 a day for 28 days. That, you know, that's a lot of money to ask of fans. I personally think so. Well, Kevin, it's been another exciting week in the American Association. So give us a great final thought heading out.
Well, you know, looking at the upcoming week, right now, first to last place is 4.5 games. So this week, all the teams are staying in there within their hub. So I got a feeling we're going to be finally seeing some separation. But it's been fun to follow this so far. I believe every team has a right to believe that they are still in it. And just stay tuned, because I think there's a lot more fabulous baseball to be found. And if you go on my blog, 10th Inning Stretch, you'll find my reason why St. Paul should be heading back to St. Paul to play some games instead of playing in front of dozens of onlookers in Sioux Falls.
And it's a good article. Go out there and check it out. Well, we want to thank once again Chelsea Ladd for joining us this week. For Kevin Luco, I am Rob Pannier, and we will see you next time on This Week in the Association.